magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, January 5th, 2016. Reading from Proverbs chapter 11, verse 10. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. Hi, listening friend. If you joined me yesterday for the Monday edition of Mark and Friends, you heard parts 1 and 2 of 2015 Year in Review, a special Moody Salem Radio Network news broadcast highlighting the top stories of the past 12 months, many of the stories being very discouraging. But we have hope as we're on the winning team if we follow the Lord Jesus Christ. It doesn't mean everything will always be easy, but the end is secure. And though we don't always have to be happy about things, we have that inward joy knowing the Lord is in control. Well, we'll pick up right where we left off yesterday with parts 3 and 4.
Salem Radio Network News, in cooperation with Moody Radio, presents 2015, the Year in Review, a look back at this year's top stories. Here again is your host, Keith Peters.
It was a very big year politically for President Obama, as challenges both nationally and internationally tested the mettle of the lame duck chief executive. We have a review of those events from the Oval Office in 2015 with Salem Radio Network News White House correspondent Greg Cluxton.
After Republicans officially took control of both the House and Senate in early January, President Obama sent his congratulations to the new leadership.
I wish them well, and I think we're going to actually have, hopefully, a productive 2015.
However, in the opening 24 hours of the new Congress, the White House threatened to veto two bills, setting the stage for some pitched battles with GOP lawmakers. One of the biggest issues of contention was Iran. Many on Capitol Hill, including Democrats, opposed the president's embrace of a nuclear deal.
Iran, under this agreement, can never get a nuclear weapon. It's not permitted to ever weaponize nuclear power.
The issue added tension to the president's already strained relationship with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. When Republicans invited the prime minister to speak to Congress, Mr. Obama refused to meet with him. Netanyahu used his speech to denounce the deal with Iran.
We must all stand together to stop Iran's march of conquest, subjugation, and terror.
The White House and Republicans also squared off over the Keystone XL oil pipeline, which the Obama administration finally rejected.
The State Department has decided that the Keystone XL pipeline would not serve the national interests of the United States. I agree with that decision.
But in a rare show of bipartisanship, the White House and GOP lawmakers teamed up to give the president greater authority to negotiate international trade deals.
I would not be doing this. I would not be signing these bills if I was not absolutely convinced that these pieces of legislation are ultimately good for American workers. I would not be signing them if I wasn't convinced they'd be good for American businesses.
That trade victory was one of three major events over the span of a few days in June that all tilted the president's way. When the Supreme Court upheld the nationwide tax subsidies under Obamacare, the president savored another legal victory for his controversial health care law, and he took a victory lap during remarks in the Rose Garden.
Today, after more than 50 votes in Congress to repeal or weaken this law, after a presidential election based in part on preserving or repealing this law, after multiple challenges to this law before the Supreme Court, the Affordable Care Act is here to stay.
The very next day, he cheered the Supreme Court's ruling giving same-sex couples the right to marry nationwide.
Today, we can say, in no uncertain terms, that we've made our union a little more perfect.
2015 marked a continuation of the president's push for LGBT rights. Highlighting transgender issues, the Obama administration designated a gender-neutral restroom in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building next door to the White House West Wing. And Mr. Obama nominated an openly homosexual service member to lead the U.S. Army. Early in the year, the president selected Secret Service Acting Director Joe Clancy to take over the agency after a string of security mishaps. White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
Mr. Clancy, over the last several months, has demonstrated that he was willing to conduct a candid, clear-eyed assessment of the shortcomings of that agency and to look at needed reforms and implement them.
But it was another rough year for the agency charged with protecting the president. There were several White House fence-jumping episodes and reports of misconduct by Secret Service agents. On several occasions throughout the year, President Obama reacted to racially motivated violence in the U.S., including riots in Baltimore, white police officers killing blacks, and the massacre at a church in Charleston, South Carolina. At the funeral for the church pastor, the president said taking down the Confederate flag is a way of expressing God's grace.
It would be one step in an honest accounting of America's history, a modest but meaningful balm for so many unhealed wounds.
And the president capped off his remarks by singing an old hymn.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved.
In September, the White House welcomed Pope Francis to the United States.
In your humility, your embrace of simplicity, in the gentleness of your words, in the generosity of your spirit, we see a living example of Jesus' teachings.
Francis joined John Paul II and Benedict XVI as the only popes to visit 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
God bless America.
For much of the year, President Obama's strategy to defeat Islamic State group militants was called into question. In the spring, he acknowledged that the Pentagon was still reviewing plans to train Iraqi forces to fight ISIS.
We don't yet have a complete strategy because it requires commitments on the part of the Iraqis as well.
Later, the administration changed course with its failed Syrian rebel training plan. A $500 million program to train and equip moderate Syrian rebels produced fewer than 80 soldiers. And in yet another policy tweak, the White House said it was putting up to 50 special operations forces on the ground in northern Syria.
They do not have a combat mission. They have a training, advising, and an assist mission. That does mean that our men and women in uniform are going to be in harm's way. It means they're going to be taking risks. It means they're in a dangerous part of the world.
It was also revealed that the Pentagon's inspector general was investigating an allegation that the military command overseeing the fight against ISIS exaggerated progress against the militant group. The counter-terror campaign gained new strength in November after ISIS attacks in France left 30 people dead.
The terrible events in Paris were obviously a terrible and sickening setback.
And soon, President Obama welcomed French President Hollande to the White House in a show of solidarity.
We're here today to declare that the United States and France stand united.
Russian President Putin also sought to join the military effort against ISIS inside Syria, but the U.S. accused Moscow of propping up the Assad regime and claimed Russian warplanes were not going after Islamic State targets. And late in the year, the president announced that he'll keep more U.S. troops than planned in Afghanistan when he leaves office. Unable to keep his promise to end the war on his watch, President Obama announced plans to keep nearly 10,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan through most of the coming year.
This modest but meaningful extension of our presence, while sticking to our current narrow missions, can make a real difference.
The president said while Afghan forces have made progress, the security situation there remains fragile. The conflicts in both Afghanistan and the Middle East have proved to be more protracted than what President Obama envisioned when he entered the Oval Office nearly 7 years ago. I'm Greg Clugston at the White House.
At the Pentagon, a major change in policy was announced by Secretary of Defense Ash Carter. Now, all jobs in the military, including frontline combat positions, will be thrown open to women.
To succeed in our mission of national defense, we cannot afford to cut ourselves off from half the country's talents and skills. We have to take full advantage of every individual who can meet our standards.
To that end, Secretary Carter announced that women will now be able to contribute to American military missions in ways they could not before. They'll be allowed to drive tanks, fire mortars, and lead infantry soldiers into combat.
They'll be able to serve as Army Rangers and Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Marine Corps infantry, Air Force parajumpers, and everything else that was previously open only to men.
That was good news to Army recruiter Sergeant First Class Natasha Hobbs, who who says she's pleased with the decision to open combat jobs to women.
I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's a welcome change for the Army as a whole.
She says she sees it as a way to advance her career.
I'm looking for leadership roles. Now that there's no restrictions on females being able to serve, you know, I could be an infantry battalion sergeant major. And previously, females weren't allowed to do that.
But Atlanta resident Cynthia Heyman has a different point of view.
I personally think it's bizarre. Women are not designed to be on the front line. Our bodies are not equipped for that, and we should not be in that position. As women, we are nurturers and caretakers and things like that. So I think we should be further back dealing with these issues.
Originally, the Marine Corps had asked for an exception to the ruling by Secretary Carter, but that appeal was denied. And a federal appeals court says it will now take a lawsuit from a men's group that says a men-only draft is unconstitutional.
This is 2015, the year in review. Still to come.
I and 46 other senators are focused on stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and we wanted to be crystal clear that Iran's leaders got the message.
2015, the year in review. Stay with us.
That was part three of 2015 Year in Review. Both today and yesterday's broadcasts are archived at greatnewsradio.org if you want to listen to portions you may have missed or listen again or forward it on to a friend through an email. Here's the fourth and concluding segment of 2015 Year in Review.
Thanks for joining us for 2015 The Year in Review. Once again, Keith Peters.
In 2015, Republicans began the year having control of the Senate, thus presenting President Obama with a big challenge of passing his legislation through for the final 2 years of his presidency. But despite having control, the GOP still had big problems getting their own programs passed into law. Correspondent Linda Kenyon has more on the year in the Senate.
2015 began with a new Republican-controlled Senate. Vice President Joe Biden did the honors by swearing in the members.
Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same?
In his opening remarks, new Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was both humble and hopeful.
The president may not be enamored of every bill we pass. That's okay, too. It's not our job to protect the president from good ideas. A little creative tension between the executive and the legislature can be a pretty healthy thing in a democracy like ours.
Absent from the new Senate on opening day was Minority Leader Harry Reid, who was injured in an accident on New Year's Day. The injuries and permanent vision loss are believed to have helped contribute to Reid's decision to announce in March that he would not seek re-election when his current term expires in 2016. National security was one of the top issues to face the Senate in 2015. The Senate Armed Services Committee invited former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger to a hearing to offer a global perspective. The hearing quickly got out of hand when protesters disrupted the proceedings. An angry chairman, Senator John McCain, threatened to have them arrested.
Get out of here, you low-life scum.
The protesters accused Henry Kissinger of war crimes for his role in the Nixon administration during the Vietnam War. Senator McCain called the outburst disgraceful. McCain was a POW in Vietnam and is a decorated war veteran. One of the biggest national security issues to face the Senate in 2015 was Iran's nuclear ambitions. This led to the Iran nuclear talks and then the Iran nuclear deal. One of the top opponents was freshman Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who penned a letter signed by most Senate Republicans that went directly to the leadership of the Islamic Republic of Iran. On CBS's Face the Nation, Senator Cotton explained his action.
I and 46 other senators are focused on stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and we wanted to be crystal clear that Iran's leaders got the message.
But Senator Cotton's letter left Secretary of State John Kerry stunned. Kerry told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee the letter served only to undermine the ongoing and extremely delicate negotiations.
This letter ignores more than two centuries of precedent in the conduct of American foreign policy.
The letter attempted to cast doubt on the Obama administration's authority to engage in nuclear negotiations with Iran. Secretary Kerry added it also portrayed the U.S. as out of step.
China, Russia, France, Germany, Great Britain, all of whom are going to either sign off or not. not sign off on an agreement. I'd like to see the next president, if all of those countries have said this is good and it's working, turn around and just nullify it on behalf of the United States.
The Obama administration continued to face staunch opposition to the Iran nuclear deal, which places limits on Tehran's nuclear program for the next 15 years in exchange for sanctions relief. Secretary of State John Kerry and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew defended the plan at a hearing of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in July. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz also testified at the hearing. He told reporters he believed the administration was making headway.
I remain confident that this agreement will go into effect. I think, ultimately, unless there are just too many closed minds.
Despite opposition at every turn, the deal did go into effect when the Senate failed to stop the Iran nuclear deal during a vote in September. Although many Republicans who opposed the deal were discouraged, some, like David Perdue of Georgia, said it's time to look ahead and focus on monitoring and enforcement.
We need to ratchet up sanctions on Iran for terrorism and human rights and continue to be vigilant in both those areas. We need to be prepared with sanctions that can be snapped back swiftly when, not if, Iran cheats.
While the Iran nuclear deal was a major focus for the U.S. Senate in 2015, so was the next presidential election. The field of Republicans seeking the GOP nomination started at 17. The number of candidates who are sitting U.S. senators is perhaps the largest in history. They are Republican senators Ted Cruz of Texas, Marco Rubio of Florida, Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. On the Democratic side, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is running. While he calls himself a Democratic socialist, Sanders is an independent seeking the Democratic presidential nomination. Other candidates vying for the White House include former governors, businessman Donald Trump, former neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson, and former Secretary of State and former Senator Hillary Clinton. It has been a rough-and-tumble campaign so far, but for the senators seeking the White House, there has been added scrutiny, especially for Marco Rubio, who's been criticized for missing too many votes in his Senate job while seeking the job at the White House. Some of the harshest criticism has come from former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, courtesy of CNBC.
Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job.
Senator Rubio responded by saying he's not going to sling mud with Jeb Bush.
The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position, and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Rubio also said he is trying to win the presidency to get the country going in the right direction. Texas Republican Ted Cruz became the first major candidate for president with his announcement at Liberty University, and when he returned to the Senate, he maintained his staunch opposition to the Obama administration. He also made it clear he was unafraid to call out his own party head, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Not only what he told every Republican senator, but what he told the press over and over and over again was a simple lie.
Senator Rand Paul maintained his opposition to big government spending on the campaign trail and on the Senate floor.
I will continue this filibuster as long as there are enough votes here to allow it to continue.
Senator Lindsey Graham maintained a consistent national security focus in the Senate.
As the Nazis pursued a master race, these radical Islamic groups are pursuing a master religion.
And Senator Bernie Sanders focused on wealth inequality and the middle class.
We can't continue having a nation in which we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major nation on earth at the same time as we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires.
Looking ahead to 2016, presidential aspirations aside, the Senate is expected to focus on many of the same issues of 2015, with national security and the economy topping the list. Linda Kenyon, Capitol Hill.
There were also problems passing long-term spending bills into law, and gridlock continued to be the byword on Capitol Hill. Over on the House side, one of the biggest events of the year was the testimony on Capitol Hill of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on her recollections of the attack on the American compound in Benghazi, Libya, on September 11, 2012, when terrorists killed four Americans, including Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens. Republicans have been relishing the chance to question the presumptive 2016 Democratic presidential nominee about what Mrs. Clinton knew about the assault and when she knew it. The hearing wound up being contentious and partisan and lasted some 11 hours. Democrat Adam Smith.
It is a prosecution. It is a partisan exercise. It is not
trying to investigate and find out the truth.
While Kansas Republican Congressman Mike Pompeo accused committee Democrats of not really caring about finding out what really happened.
They say they want to get at the truth, but the truth of the matter is they spent most of their time today, anybody can rewind the tape and find, they spent most of their time today attacking members of this committee in this process, and I regret that. I think that's a violation of their duty to the country, and most importantly, their duty to the families.
Mrs. Clinton herself told Congressman Jim Jordan he's wrong to say she and others in the administration weren't being straight with the American people about what happened in Benghazi. Congressman Jordan responded, saying the explanation that an anti-Muslim video was to blame for the Benghazi violence didn't jibe with what Mrs. Clinton said in private. It was a stunning live execution on television, and viewers of Roanoke television station WDBJ Channel 7 saw it unfold before their very eyes. On the morning of August 26, 2015, as Adam Ward focused his television camera on reporter Allison Parker and her subject, Vicki Gardner, at Smith Mountain Lake, Virginia, a disgruntled former co-worker, Vester Flanagan, approached from behind and began firing, killing both Ward and Parker, and seriously injuring Gardner. As Ward fell, his camera got a good picture of Flanagan holding the gun. WDBJ News Director Kelly Zuber says even at the end of his life, Adam Ward was able to capture video of the gunman. The killer, Flanagan, also recorded the scene, and later, as police were chasing him, posted it on social media outlets Twitter and Facebook. Flanagan had been angry about what he had perceived as slights to him as both a black man and as a homosexual. After the murders, Flanagan fled into Northern Virginia, where police finally caught up with him on a freeway median. Surrounded, Flanagan shot and killed himself. The nation was stunned by the suddenness of the attack on morning television, and people around the country mourned two young journalists whose lives ended just at the beginning of their careers. Vicki Gardner with the Smith Mountain Lake Chamber of Commerce was seriously wounded in the attack and hospitalized. This has been 2015, the year in review, a co-production of Salem Radio Network News and Moody Radio. 2015, the year in review, has been written and edited by Keith Peters, produced and engineered by Bill Davis. The executive producer is Ken Lorman. I'm Keith Peters. Thank you for joining us for 2015, the year in review.
Well, that was kind of a discouraging story to end this 2015 year in review on, but those were top stories from the past 12 months. So let me close out with a proverb that will maybe bring some clarity to much of that sad news. Proverbs 28:28. When the wicked rise to power, people go into hiding. But when the wicked perish, the righteous thrive. Dear one, may you thrive in the Lord today so that you can have an impact on your family, on your friends, in your community, where you work, quite possibly even reaching the world through internationals or your travel. So let that light of Christ shine in and through you and be a blessing to others today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.